Thank you all for coming. I don't know, like, this is like my least favorite part of panels, introducing everyone. So I didn't invent a game, but I'm stealing a game. I was in New York Monday and Tuesday working on a project, and I visited the Little Brown offices, Little Brown Publishing, and their director of school library marketing, Victoria Stapleton, plays this game. It's called 10 Questions in 1 Minute. And you have to answer the questions as fast as you can, and it never only goes 1 minute, but it's a fun way to get to know people a little bit better. So, are you guys up for that? And they are completely like random questions. So if they're terrible, my wife helped me come up with them. So that's Sharps Galore on Twitter. You can just blame her. But please don't blame her. All right. So I need help from two people in the crowd. I need one person to count the questions, because I just have them on a big long list. So one person that can like show me how many questions I'm at, and one person to be my timer. Do I have any volunteers for a timer? Who's got an iPhone with a timer or a little no, time? Yes. And who can show me how many questions I've asked? Yes. All right. You guys ready? Who wants to go first?
Me.
Oh, yes. All right. The first two are kind of probably maybe the most important. Are you ready? As soon as I'm done asking the first question. You ready, Jim?
Yep, go.
Jim McLean, here we go. Name?
Jim McLean.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a math teacher.
Favorite color?
Blue.
Favorite place to vacation?
Key West.
What's a book you loved as a kid?
Boxcar Children.
Favorite mythical creature?
Griffin.
Last song you danced to?
Thriller?
Yes. Favorite type of weather?
Sunny.
If you had to color your hair, what color would you color it?
This color.
That color. What's the weirdest thing you've ever done in public?
Talked on a piano.
All right, give me a hand, Jim McLean. How long? All right, how was our time there?
That was 35 seconds.
35 seconds?
Wow.
Whoa. So everyone will have the same first two questions? Now they're all like, oh, this is kind of weird. All right.
Now I'm just competitive. 35 seconds.
Who's next?
I'll just go so that I can be done with it.
All right. Aw, you're not excited for my game. All right, are you ready? Timer ready. Hand counter ready. What is your name?
Sabine.
What do you do for a living, Sabine?
I teach French.
Favorite place to buy a book?
Online.
Comic strip that you love?
Asterix.
Least favorite household chore?
Vacuuming.
What is the furthest you've ever been from home?
I am really far away from home.
What is your least favorite holiday?
I don't have any.
What is your favorite movie that comes from a book?
I don't like movies that come from a book.
favorite toy as a child?
Oof, piano.
Favorite outdoor activity?
Running.
And your favorite mythical creature?
I don't like myths.
All right, give her a hand. All right.
I don't want to go last. I'm volunteering.
Okay. I'm going to get it over with. Here we go. Ready?
Yes.
Ready? Ready?
I know the first one.
What do you do for a living?
Oh, I'm a school librarian in Minnesota.
School librarian. What is your name?
Laura Gibbon.
The last thing you read that you loved that's not a picture book?
Oh, that's not a picture book.
Like on a
The War That Saved My Life.
Oh, describe yourself in 3 words. That's one. Two.
Reader,
perfect. Favorite song?
All I can think of is Shake It Off, right?
Yes. Favorite type of weather?
Cool enough to wear long sleeves.
Fictional character you relate to the most?
Roller Girl.
If you had $10, what would you buy right now if I gave you $10?
I'd go down to Vault of Midnight.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever done in public?
Stop.
Come on, Laura.
Shrug. No. Star in a John Chu video.
Oh, yes. And what is your least favorite household chore?
Washing dishes.
Washing dishes. Give her a hand, Laura. I didn't know that you didn't like to wash dishes. See, now we're learning so much. Who's next? Who we got?
Oh, I guess me.
All right, it's you. Are you ready, sir?
Yes.
Ready. Ready. What is your name?
Keen Su.
What do you do for a living?
A cartoonist.
What is the last thing you love that you read?
The latest book by Kelly Link.
Favorite place to vacation?
Hong Kong.
If you were going to be reincarnated by one as one inanimate object, what would it be?
A whoopee cushion.
favorite mythical creature?
Dragon.
Least or most favorite outdoor activity?
Beach volleyball.
Favorite type of weather?
Temperate.
Favorite toy as a kid?
Transformers.
What color would you color your hair if you could color your hair?
Electric blue.
Boom. All right.
Did I win? Yes.
Definitely.
I'm winning.
There's one more
I'm winning.
To go.
I'm
yeah,
winning.
All right.
Priorities. All right, are we ready?
Yes.
Save the best for last, do you think?
Oh, definitely.
Definitely. All right. Ready? What is your name?
Tori Wilcott.
What do you do for a living?
Educational person and cartoonist.
Best place to vacation?
Earth.
Favorite place to buy a book?
Little Island Comics.
Favorite toy as a kid?
All of them.
Favorite mythical creature?
Dragon. I hate you.
Favorite article of clothing?
Pants.
Last song you danced to? If you could color your hair, what color would you color it?
Green.
Great. And the fictional character you relate to the most?
Eleanor Park Park.
Oh.
Can we give them all a big hand?
Did he beat me?
Yes. Aww.
Yes.
It's because I stumbled.
All right. So now the questions get much, much easier.
The stressful part is over.
All right. So I have a lot of questions, and we're going to just kind of see which ones work for where the conversation goes. I have lots of questions for everyone, and I have at least one question that is person-specific. Make sense? Anybody have any questions? And if you guys have any questions, just raise your hand, and we'll get the microphone to you. So that way we can make sure that you are all recorded and we can get your lovely voices on tape. Sound good? All right, guys, really quick. How about we just start by talking about the first comic that you remember, or comic book or comic strip that you remember loving as a kid? And we'll start down at the end of the key.
I guess probably the first thing that I remember reading was probably Garfield. I think that was like the very first, and I think it's sort of in cartoonist circles, a lot of people sort of make fun of Garfield as a thing, but it's I think it's also one of those things where if you're a cartoonist, you're also, I think everybody sort of started reading, you know, like things like Garfield and like Archie comics, and I think that's, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with stuff like that. But, and then I sort of graduated on quickly onto things like Dragon Ball manga, because I was growing up in Hong Kong, so I had a lot of access to different kinds of comics. And I was reading a lot of Asterix. Asterix was one of the really early ones that was being translated to English. So, I mean, for me, and at the same time when I was reading Dragon Ball, it was being translated to Chinese, and because I was actually sort of, I was mostly taught how to speak English first, and so I was actually trying to learn Chinese, and that was one of the things that got me to sort of try to understand and learn something, to like, oh, the drawings are amazing and the action that's happening, all the stuff is great, but I actually wanted to find out more. So then that's when I made the effort to sort of dig in and try to learn a new language, or learn a little bit better to get into the comics. So.
Conan the Barbarian.
And when was that? Like,
that was
like as a kid.
When I found a dirty old box of comics somewhere and found some old Conan the Barbarian. After that, instead of Garfield, I was more Hagar the Horrible. If we all remember that old gem, I think there's a theme in my life already showing up. My parents did not approve of comics at all when I was a kid. I have dyslexia, and my parents were very determined that I would only read prose books, and I was very determined that I would not read at all. So it was kind of a mixed bag. But then Archie and Betty and Veronica and that kind of great stuff.
Did they ever come around to comics?
When I made a comic, they got into it. No, not really. They're not. They like mine because I have wonderfully, don't let that fool you, they're wonderful. But they like mine and they like Keen's, and they're just not sold on the whole thing.
particularly. I keep buying them. I bought them, like, the photographer. I keep buying them, like, literature and, like, giving it to them and then going, like, but there are pictures in my book, and I'm a grown-up.
Oh.
Kills me, but yes.
Keep fighting the good fight.
I try.
Jim.
My favorite comic as a kid was Batman because I was 2 years old when the Batman TV show came on. You can do the math. I'm 50. And so I read anything that had Batman in it. My first reading came from a Batman comic. It was Batman 202, or no, 204, I'm sorry, where on the cover, it's a bunch of people disguised as blind men, and they are all wearing placards that say, "I am blind." And the first phrase I learned to read was, "I am blind," because it repeated throughout the entire comic. So I credit that comic with helping me to begin to learn to read because I wanted to know what the words were and what they meant. My mother would read them to me, and so, you know, that's where I began. And then from there, it picked up. I read all of DC stuff. I read Superboy and Justice League, and I was a DC kid growing up, and those characters became role models for me. And when I was 7, my parents got divorced, and my stepfather, who had read Dr. Wortham, Carol, burned all my comic books right in front of me. And so that was a pretty traumatic experience. But in the summers and in the winter, I would go get to visit my dad and my grandparents, and they would buy me comics, and they would say, "You take these home with you." I said, no, I'll just leave them here. And so they were always a safe place for me. So those heroes stayed my heroes throughout my entire childhood. Until I escaped that terrible situation. And that's why I'm still, you know, a big fan today. Follow that one. Well,
I know.
Sorry.
Terrible decision. No. I think my comic childhood really had to do with access. And I didn't have a lot of access to comics as a kid in kind of really suburban Minnesota. And so I grew up on a lot of Garfield because that's what I had access to in those school book orders. And I think I read Garfield all of fourth grade, that's all I read, until my parents said, "You can order something from the book order as long as it's not Garfield." And then the other thing that I had access to was anytime we were taking road trips or back and forth to grandma's, the convenience stores that we would stop at would have like Archie and occasionally a Mad magazine, which was but that was pretty much it until I became an adult and kind of started becoming a librarian, and that was my second entry into the comic world.
So I was born and raised in France, and I came here 20 years ago. And I don't think that I remember my first comic book because I think that I was really born with comics around me, not even knowing that I was surrounded by all these comic books. That to me, it's kind of awkward to call them comics because I call them BD, bande dessinée. And so that's how I think of a comic book, is like these hard books like this. So to me, this is a comic book. And so what I remember is that I really didn't like reading them at all. And so I think I went through my whole life reading them and not enjoying them. And then I moved to the U.S. and then I taught here for many years. And then my department asked me, "Could you please create a course that would engage students and be different?" And then I looked around my house and I saw all these books. And I thought, well, maybe I should do something with those. And that's when I actually started liking comic books or bande dessinée. And that was 3 years ago when I actually read everything that I had at home. Mostly they were my husband's and my kids. And I started discovering this whole universe. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I have all of these at home. And I have the whole collection of Asterix, the whole collection of Tintin, the whole collection of a whole bunch of other books. And then I told my parents, send me everything that you have home. And I want to use all these books. So my experience is a little bit different. And that's why I say that I don't like myths and I don't like fantasy. This world is really awkward to me. I was really not born into the comics world. I was born into this world, which is a little bit different to me. So that's my story.
So, Keen, we were talking just for a second, and I was saying how thankful I am that Jellibee, do I say that right?
Yep.
Because I teach third grade, so I've probably heard it like 20 different ways. is back in print, the first book.
Yes,
because
both books.
I was paying like $40, like when they would destroy it on like used book places, because it was like this like treasure to be able to own one of those. So, hey, is Capstone?
Yeah, it's Capstone.
Yay, Capstone. Yep. But I would love it if you could maybe tell us a little bit about your new series that's coming out with them.
So my new series is called March Grand Prix. It's going to be coming out in August, so about a month and a half away. And it's the elevator pitch for it is Hello Kitty meets the Fast and the Furious. So it's cute animals racing cars. So it's
The Fast and the Wet King?
So there's three books coming out, and they're 48 pages each, and there's going to be a trade collection. The trade collection that collects all three stories somehow ended up getting called The Fast and the Furriest. It was our working title for the entire time, and then it sort of stuck, and we couldn't come up with anything better, so it's almost a joke title that's part of the thing now. So there's going to be three books, 48 pages, and they're all coming out at once, so it's going to be exciting.
Cool. Yeah. Tori, we're going to go now, so that's how we'll do everyone the question, then we'll have individual question, then we'll start with the next person for the next question. Does that make sense? Makes sense here. Yes.
Okay.
Got it. So comics have really changed in schools and in the classroom. I know graphics and Scholastic is celebrating 10 years, and it seems like we live in a different world than when they started. So why do you think graphic novels, comics are so huge with kids?
Well, I have a little bit of a work perspective because I work almost exclusively with kids who have a learning need. And in my experience, comics are just so much more accessible. So if you're looking for a gateway into literacy, if you're looking for something to hold on to when you're trying to figure out what the words are, that comics are easy to read and at the same time, not always, but generally, are a bit easier to read, but they are not necessarily patronizing. So you can read a comic that is at your reading level, but is also at your intellectual level. So that's, at least from my perspective, something that's incredibly important about comics and graphic novels and all that.
Jersey, did you tweet what she just said? That was beautiful. Come on, man. Come on, man. Pick up the phone.
Jersey.
Killing me, man. Paying
attention. Get on the internet.
What's my question?
Same question. We're all going to ask you that question. Why do you think it is that comics are so huge right now with kids?
In my school, the language arts teachers often will shut down a kid from choosing a book in the library because it's below their Lexile score. And so when they have, your Lexile 640, you can't possibly read this book. This is terrible for you. It's only 500. And kids are forced to read for language arts class, in my school at least. They're forced to read things that they don't want to read, and so they become reluctant readers. Mm-hmm. And so in our library then, I, as a math teacher, I don't have to have that requirement. I don't care what their Lexile score is. I don't even ask. And so I say, you bring a book to my class, and it can be whatever book you want. I don't care if it's a graphic novel. The only ones I exclude from our library are Where's Waldo? Because there is nothing to read. There's absolutely nothing. So I encourage my kids to bring graphic novels into my classroom to have something to do when they're finished, because not all kids work at the same pace. So I always require them to bring something in, and I let them choose whatever they want, and that's a much more successful tactic as far as I've seen.
I thought I was going to go all summer without hearing. I mean, you hear the word Lexile.
Sorry.
And just for those of you who don't know, Lexile is a way that it's like a computer system that takes sentence length and like syllables and words and says if kids can read a book or not based on a test they take. And Fahrenheit 459, is that right? 451. Yeah. See, I read kid books, and Diary of a Wimpy Kid actually fall in the same Lexile band, which is crazy. But so, Laura, what do you think?
So my brain was going in two directions for this one, but I think one of the reasons that graphic novels for kids have really taken off that I think we don't talk about as much is that schools and libraries can connect with the way that graphic novels and comics for kids are being published now. Like, the way that schools and libraries acquire books and things are through certain avenues, and there's a lot more being published for kids through those avenues versus something like Diamond that schools and libraries don't really understand as well. And so I think that's one of the reasons that they're really, kids are having access through schools and libraries more. And I guess my brain was going in another direction too, thinking that my whole perspective is I want kids to see themselves as a reader. And I think we really need to broaden what the definition of reading is. And I think for so long, schools have been like narrowing that definition. Well, it better be like nothing against the Newbery Award, but it better be something like a Newbery Award-winning book. That's what real reading is for kids. And even eliminating like the nonfiction reading that kids like to do, and graphic novels, and maybe statistical things, or Guinness Book of World Records that's so popular with kids. Like, if we, the more that we can broaden that, the more that we can have kids really see themselves as readers. And I think graphic novels are just one of the ways that kids can really see themselves as readers. Back in 2003, when I first got a grant to bring graphic novels into the first library I was, I had to collect data for this grant. And so I collected data at various grades about kids seeing themselves as readers, and particularly with boys in particular, but both boys and girls, fourth grade, fifth grade, and sixth grade, it just got dramatically more and more kids said, I don't like to read, I'm not a reader. And I think there's a shift in that with graphic novels.
And now we have a Newbery and Caldecott graphic novel winner, honor winner this year.
So now, Newbery.
You want a Newbery, I'll give you El Defo. Yeah.
Totally switch it up what it means to be a Newbery book.
What do you think?
So,
because you deal with a little older students.
I'm teaching at the college level, and I teach a language requirement class. So students who come to my class do not want to take the class. It's part of the language requirement. So I only have about 10 set of students who are interested and who want to take French. And so I teach the last sequence of the four semesters. And so I wanted to find a way to have them be interested in the language other than having to read literature or having to read conventional texts. And so I decided to show them that they could actually understand the language by reading graphic novels, comics. I don't know what term to use to read those kind of books. And so I started with this one really to show them that understanding and reading goes beyond the words, and that there is a common knowledge that you can get from the images. Oh, I'm sorry, that's my phone. That's what I tell my students never to do. excuse me. And so I choose this one because it's very difficult. The language in this book is actually very complicated, and you can read those throughout your entire life. When you're 50 years old, you will understand something, and you go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I never understood this before. And so these books are actually very complicated. The language itself is very complicated. And so this is the very first book I have them read, and because I know they're going to be frustrated with the language. But when they come to class, they all understood the story. And then they are empowered right at the beginning, thinking, oh, wait, well, maybe I can get through this, and maybe I can understand this. If there are different levels of understanding, and I got the first level, and then we work through the language to sort of get to all the different levels. And it really captures their attention, the fact that they can understand a story without understanding all the French or the Latin. There's a ton of Latin in there and a lot of puns, and they don't get them at all. But they still get some idea of the language and of what's going on. And it really encourages them, and it makes them want to read more and want to learn more. And I had comments at the end of the semester that students said that this class looked like a modern literature class. Aww. And then I was like, yeah, this is really cool. And then some of them said, I didn't really enjoy reading when I came to this class, and I was really afraid about my French skills and my reading, my writing, my vocabulary. All of this improved throughout the whole semester, and now I actually like reading, and I'm going to read more of those. So I think it's very effective.
That's cool.
Okay. It's just sort of going off of what you guys have been saying, but I think in general we're becoming more visually literate. You know, you see kids learning how to use iPads at the age of 2 or 3, and so there's a lot more. We're becoming more visually literate as a species, and I think. And I think with comics, it's, you know, when you're a kid, there's this visual appeal of looking at these pictures and trying to decipher what they mean and seeing where the story's going. And I don't think that's ever really changed. I think most kids are always really interested in comics, but I think now it's about accessibility. It's the adults are okay with it being in libraries, because I teach in, I do school visits. And I was actually, I was doing a lot of school visits this past school year. And just going into the school libraries and seeing all of the graphic novel sections and seeing the wide variety, you've got manga, you've got, you know, the French translated comics, you've got superhero comics, you've got all sorts, like, and you know, sort of the North American sort of style comics as well now, and everything's, the accessibility is so much greater. I don't think things have changed that much, is that they're able to get their hands on them, and we're not, as adults, not willing, we're not as resistant to that, that it's more open, and I think that's, and so that's just feeding that, they're more excited to get to read more and to get to read the things they want to read.
Tori, could you talk a little bit about your work with just dyslexia and dyslexia awareness and some of the cool stuff you do with that?
Okay, there's a thing called dyslexia, and people have it. And it turns out, not that big a deal. I think the majority of my work about dyslexia and about dyslexia awareness and about LDs in general, which in my opinion stands for learning difference and not learning disabled, for the record, is just the idea that literacy, and I think I'm going to agree with you very wholeheartedly, literacy comes in a lot of different shapes, a lot of different shapes and sizes. For me, reading has always been very difficult, but I love stories, and I devour audiobooks. I devour them like absolutely crazy, and I get very picky about my readers and all sorts of stuff. And I find that, okay, I'm going to sum this down a little bit more. Reading is an individual thing, and I think that reading and literacy is the most solitary activity that you can have. You read a book, and you interpret it and you put a lens on it. And then you can go and talk to somebody about it. But no matter what conversation you have, that lens is always your own. And I guess my work and anything I try to do around LD is just saying, my lens as a dyslexic person is still a valid lens. And my reading, if it is through a comic, if it is through an audiobook, if it is through any vehicle, is still a valid perspective. And just because I'm not reading prose does not mean that I am invalidated and my opinion is invalidated. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you. That was amazing. All right, Jim, next question for everyone. So I'm going to back up a little bit. So I might like the new question that I like have to ask everyone that is like that creates things and like does things in their school that is so creative or like makes books. I'm just fascinated, like as a teacher and as a parent, I want to know if there was what did your teachers or what did your parents do? What was home life like? What do you think, what part of your childhood do you, or what's one piece of your childhood or one story you can tell that you feel you happened at home or at school that helped lead you to this life of creativity? Does that make sense?
Wow.
I know it's big,
okay.
but there's got to be something that's happening. Where, because people, we want to help our kids to have the opportunity if they want to be creators, not just creators in this world, not just consumers of this world. And we all consume lots of things, but I think that there's creativeness in everyone in some way. So I'm just curious if you can think of something from your childhood or from a class or a teacher or even in adulthood that led you to be creative people.
Yeah, that one's going to be pretty loaded. My stepfather burned my comics.
Yeah.
And so
I was worried to lead with you.
but it's a great question for me to answer. So my stepfather burned my comics, and he was abusive. I got beaten every day for 5 years. And so it was pretty rough. My grandmother one year got me the Mego Superman action figure for Christmas, and he mercilessly teased me for playing with dolls. Playing with dolls is for girls. I'm sure you're familiar with the old times, the way things used to be like that. And my mother was somewhat subversive, and it's kind of funny because I brought the little prop that explains this. My mother went to Ben Franklin and got us these little PVC superheroes, and I still have my Batman based on the classic drawing by Carmine Infantino and Murphy Anderson. And what that was like, you can play with these, But when he comes around, you put it in your pocket. So the Mego figures are 8 inches tall. You couldn't put those in your pocket, but I could slip Batman in my pocket. My little brother had Robin, my little sister had Superman. And we had adventures all day long until he could get home and way in the pocket they went. So having those adventures, not being able to read comics, but being able to remember the ones I had read, we were able to do basically cooperative role play, you know, with no rules or anything like that, but we were telling stories. And so I continued to tell stories then throughout, you know, young adulthood, and when I got out of the situation, then became an adult, then telling stories in actual role-playing games with dice and everything became a big part of my life then too. And as a teacher, I wanted to do something, you know, to motivate my children. I mean, that's one of the key things about creating, is for me to motivate my children to want to do something different. And so when you know, you hear about Jack Kirby creating the entire Marvel Universe when he was in his 40s, I didn't start making my comic book, actually publishing my comic book, until I was 48. And so I try to show my kids, it's like, it's never too late. I've been a teacher for 28 years. I just started being a comic book creator. And they, and everybody who's Facebook friends with me, Bruce and Carol and you and Jersey, and say, when I post stuff, I'm like a little kid. Do you not agree? Yeah. I'm like a little kid. Look what I did. Look what I made. Look what this artwork came in from this guy. This is awesome. And it just, you know, my kids see that, and they see the enthusiasm that it brings out in me, because our curriculum is scripted. We have a math curriculum that is the worst thing I have ever seen in my life. It is, say this, do this. And I'm not exaggerating. It says, say this, do this. And I'm sorry, but I've been a teacher too long to follow the script. And so I show them creativity is so much more. They see the enthusiasm, they buy into the enthusiasm, and I get much better results from that. So I'm trying to transfer that to my kids. I want them to see, it's like, when you get to control what you're doing and you get to create your materials, it provides a great joy in yourself. And I'm 50 years old and I act like I'm 12, because they see the excitement in the classroom. And that to me is what it's about.
Well, I'm glad that you get to be 12, because it didn't sound like you got to be 12 when you were.
I didn't get to be 7 through 12, so I started, you know, I just kind of stopped at 12.
Yeah. Laura, what do you think?
I'm not a comics creator here, but there is a story that I feel like there's something from my childhood that made reading for pleasure or reading just for fun, which I think is such a valuable thing for kids, and it, like, just a life skill, being able to have pleasure connected to reading. And it comes from my dad. And my dad, when he was very young, was very sick, and he had to stay inside and just have I think it was asthma. And my son, I think, has the same sort of thing, but now we have, you know, inhalers and all sorts of stuff. So when he was a kid, he was just, you know, stay in bed, and what he had was Tarzan and all these things that he could read for pleasure. And then as I was growing up, I saw an adult man reading for pleasure all the time, all this fun sort of stuff. And so he was my role model, really, to, like, read the things that I thought were interesting, magazines, the Sunday comics, and Garfield, until I was cut off on the school book orders. But I think he was really my role model in that way.
So I'm not a creator either.
Oh my gosh, you're so creative in your class, though.
Yes.
Analyzing art. I love looking at art and talking about it, but I cannot make art at all. I'm a horrible drawer. I make stick figures, and my kids laugh at me, and they're like, Mom, this doesn't look like anything. How can you talk about comics? You don't even know how to draw. And so I'm really not an artist at all. If I were to describe, the artistic part of me is photography. I love taking pictures, and I love making movies. And I think that, so as a child, I loved reading, and I actually studied literature. And then I loved taking pictures and making movies. And I think that all of this got combined when I met my husband. My husband is an artist, and he paints, and he draws, and he tries to make those, but he's 47 and hasn't published yet, so maybe it'll happen one day. But I think it's thanks to him that I sort of put everything together. And my love for comics and for this art form or for this medium is that I just love analyzing, and I'm fascinated by all the what people do and how they bring movement and how they express ideas and how they express emotions through pictures and through the organization on the page. So I love analyzing it, but I don't really know where my creativity comes from.
Okay.
I don't really have like a central moment. I do remember drawing from as young as I can remember. I think I was maybe 3 or 4 when I saw the first Tron movie, and I do actively remember drawing pages and pages of light cycles going right across the page and all over. And so I've been drawing for as long as I can remember. But I do remember one thing, like one noticeable thing was, I think in Form 1 or Form 2, grades 7 and 8, we had a cultural studies class, which is basically geography and history in the class. And we had a teacher, Miss Wagster, who was pretty much free rein, open to doing whatever you wanted to do. In terms of like turning in your the assignments. And so there was one where I think I remember doing a project on Sir Francis Drake, and I had all of these insanely detailed drawings that, because she didn't mind what I turned in as long as I did the research, I did all the I hit all the points that she wanted me to hit. Anything else I could do, she was totally fine with. So I had all these super detailed drawings of pirate ships, and I think I had one where little people were getting blown off and like all this stuff. But then, you know, I know I can still tell you about, you know, square rigged ships and you know, like all the differences between like a fore and aft mainsail and all that stuff. And like I still remember that, and that was from that one assignment. And just being encouraged to like this one thing that I was interested in drawing and sort of wanting to learn about how things worked and how it would work in a drawing led me to learn about how the actual thing worked, and that I actually retained that. And so having that encouragement was huge, I think, for me, like in that class. I always think about that class as something where I was like, okay, this is where I can do, take something that I'm interested in and might not fit into what this particular the rules are, but I can still use it and apply it in a different way. And so I always think about that.
Yeah. I've seen his childhood drawings. They're 90% little people being blown out. Like, it's like, his parents are hilarious. Like, they have all his stuff. And, like, it's so cute. I have a book of his, like, personal autobiography, which is, like, covered in Star Trek stuff. It's my favorite. It's hung up over my head. It's adorable. The moment for me, if I was going to say it, when I was in, it was in grade 3, I was completely illiterate. I couldn't read at all. I didn't know the alphabet. Completely, completely illiterate, but I had managed to sneak through, and nobody had noticed. Huge classrooms. but we started doing spelling tests, and there was no way that I was going to get through this at all. So we were doing cat, hat, bat, all of these kind of things. And the teacher was saying them, and then we were writing them down. Well, I was like trying to figure out how to get out of this one, because my previous things had been jumping up and making a joke, or having to go to the bathroom, and you know, all of these different things. But so what I did was I drew everything that she said, and there were a couple of things that were like concepts, and I still drew them. And I drew everything she said, drew it all up on the page, and handed it in, and I was like, dodge that bullet. I'm still kind of like that. I'm like, well, handed it in, it was good, right? But she, oh man, sorry. She called me in, she sat me down, and she opened with, "These are the best drawings I have ever seen. We need to sit down. We need to talk about how you need to draw more, because this is fantastic." And we sat down and we had like a whole, it was like over recess, and we had this whole conversation about how drawing's awesome and I need to draw more. And like, do you want, like, because we've got coloring, do you want some like pencil crayons on your table or something? Because you can draw as much as you want. And I'm going, all right. Okay. And then she was like, also, you need to spell. We need to also get you spelling. But that was like this complete afterthought. Like, this was just like a, and it was busted with the dyslexia like very soon after that, but it was this, it taking something very negative, which could have really decimated me, and instead making this really positive, really pleasant experience. I think that was a big formative moment.
Yeah. Mm. Is there, I know we started, is there a 3 o'clock session?
There's a thing starting at 3, but you can run a little longer.
Okay, how, can I have an individual question for everyone. I have three, yeah. Could we do those and then end with one thing really quick?
Yes, sounds good.
All right. Jim, on your website, big black letters, it says, buy Reading with Pictures, comics that make kids smarter. I love that line. Can you just talk a little bit about your work with that and your project and stuff you're doing?
2 years ago, I self-published my comic Solution Squad. It's math-based superheroes written for middle school because I teach middle school. And I met Josh Elder and Carol at the same time at Z2E2 in 2013, did a panel together, and Josh liked my work enough that he was already at work on Josh Elder, the founder of Reading with Pictures. He was already at work on this book. I met him here at Kids Read Comics that same year, and I showed him my work. He said, oh, this is great. Maybe next time. I went, oh. So as it turned out then, after the Kickstarter went through and he started shopping around for publishers, he got Andrew McNeil on board with Reading with Pictures, Comics That Make Kids Smarter. Back then it was called The Graphic Textbook. And he said, hey, you lettered your comic, right? And I go, yeah. He goes, well, could you letter some stories for us? I go, sure. So I lettered 3 of the stories in the book. And I go, oh, by the way, this math story you have in here, that's wrong. He goes, what? And so I started correcting the math in the story because they did the editor they had, who is fantastic, by the way, great editor, but she was a kindergarten teacher and didn't know the difference between probability and odds. And so I had to go in and smooth that out and so they could fix it up. And so then he said, well, hey, can you do some color correction for me? Sure, I can do that. Would you like to help with the teacher's guide? Sure, I can do that. And so then next thing you know, it's like, you know, the book's not done. Can we put your story in there too? And so, sure. And so basically I got to participate for an entire year on Reading with Pictures, Comics That Make Kids Smarter. It has stories from language arts, math, social studies, and science. It has 3 or 4 stories from each subject for grades 3 through 6. And there's a 160-page teacher's guide online that I designed and co-edited. And it has basically free lesson plans and a downloadable PDF for every single story, including assessments and answer keys.
Do you tell the teacher what to say in the lesson?
No.
say this.
No.
Do this.
But there are pronunciation guides for some of the difficult words. You know, there are suggestions in lesson plans what standards, including Common Core, MCRL, and any other source of standards that we could find, because we didn't want to be exclusively with the evil word of the Common Core.
So, you said Common Core and Lexile, man.
I know, right? Really, and I'm on vacation. Summer. I'm on vacation too. I'm sorry, but yeah, it's so. I was very proud when this book came out because originally they only wanted 8 pages of my story, and when they found a publisher, I got to put the entire 24 pages in it. So I get the biggest story in the book, and it's right smack in the middle, and so I get to brag all about it. So I even signed the fronts now. So I'm not ashamed. This is Josh's book, but he has a page in the front with his name on it. And I always sign the page before it because it doesn't have that. So I cheat.
So Laura, you've been in a library for a decade. And you've seen comics and you've seen graphic novels. You've seen it change tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
What would your hope be for the next 10 years?
I think right now in my school, I'm still seeing the there's a divide. Choosing when kids come in, the adults in their world say, oh, you should choose from over here, or you can choose from over here right now, or I need you to have a DEAR book or a SIR book or another acronym book for using during school time, but you can choose, you know, from over here in the comic book area for free time or taking home or something like that. I would really like to see that we really truly broaden our definition of reading, and that I'm thinking of one particular third grader. She's now a lot older, but She was reading way above her grade level, but the things that she checked out that day were all totally relevant to her. She had a couple baby mouse. She had a couple chapter books that like met her reading level of prose reading. She had some nonfiction things that she was just really feeding all of those interests in one stack of books that she checked out of the library. And I really want that to be the way it is for every kid. I don't know. Does that kind of get it?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Can I just jump in real quick?
Yeah.
I find that kids are really self-selecting in what they read, right? Like, if there's something that they find boring, they're not going to read it, right?
And I was just silently cheering. I was like, oh, Baby Mouse is the best third grade, like, experience. Like, totally connects with the third grader that she is. And I was so thankful that somebody didn't say, you know what? That's just a little bit too easy for you. You should be picking different books. That would have broken my heart. But to see that she had all those things in her pile to feed every part of her reading self made me really happy. So that's my hope for the future.
All right, last one. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. So I took 2 years of Spanish, and I can ask to go to the bathroom, and I can ask to sharpen my pencil. And I remember that my Spanish name was Oscar. So can you just talk a little bit more about how you get something that for some of us is so hard? And I know that the older you get, probably the harder it is to learn a language. Can you just tell us a little bit more about how in the world you do that? Because I don't... if I'm going to learn another language, it's going to probably have to be through comics.
Well, I was really amazed because I did an experience this year that I had never done before. There's a festival, a comic festival in France called Festival d'Angoulême. I don't know if you know about it. It's at the end of January. And so I taught the course in the winter, and I thought that I was going to buy the whole collection of all the books that were presented there. There were 34 books. And I added up the price, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to buy all these books. It added up to $700. And so I made a proposal for a grant that was accepted. And I was like, yeah, cool. So I brought all the books from France, and I had the whole collection of 35 books. And then I decided that I was going to ask the students to choose a book every single week and critique the book and write out 3 pages on a journal, either talking about the art or the text or their experience or what they had understood, what they didn't understand. And then I thought, I'm just going to see what happens. And so we started at the very beginning of the semester, and then we actually lived live. We went through the whole selection process, the whole award process. We saw who won, who didn't win, and we had the books. And so the students were able to see, oh, so this is the one that got the first prize. I want to read this one next. And so we saw, we looked at all the prizes and who got prizes for which category. And so they read 8 of them throughout the semester in addition to what we were doing. So that was completely separate. In addition to the actual studying of certain books that I had picked. And at the end of the semester, they all came to me and said, can I get another one? Can I please read another one? And they said that that experience was wonderful, that it was very personalized, that they were able to read the book that they liked. They were able to talk about what they liked or what they disliked in the book, and that they learned language through it. And so that was a big surprise to me because I really didn't think that they would learn French. I thought they would learn maybe a little bit about the culture, maybe a little bit about the medium, but not about the language. And in the comments that they wrote at the end of the semester, they said that their grammar and their vocabulary hugely improved just by reading and writing those books. I was not correcting their French when I was writing. When I was reading their journals, the idea was not for me to correct all the grammar. It was for them to have pleasure in writing, and they were just getting a grade for assessment. So they were, what's the word that I'm looking for?
Completion.
Yeah. So everybody was getting an A or an A-minus if I couldn't really understand what they were saying. But so it was really for them to write out of pleasure and to read out of pleasure, and they actually learned more than what I expected. And they said that they had learned so much vocabulary that in any other French class that they had learned before without me doing anything.
That's the best part.
So that was awesome. I was really very, very pleased because it was really done without me doing anything at all.
So normally when you teach a college class and it ends, do kids come up and ask you to give them more things to read? Because I cannot imagine ever doing that in college.
So that was the first time.
Yeah,
that.
Right?
And then they all said, can we keep one? I was like, no, I'm sorry.
No.
Because they wanted to bring the books home. So I had them buy two books throughout the semester, and they were so happy to have their own. But they wanted to read more, and they came to me, can we do extra credit? Can we get another one? They were really, really enthusiastic. And that was their last semester. A French, so it was really out of pure pleasure.
Cool. That's amazing. Well, we're all over in time, but it's not my fault. But really quick, if you guys could just give us one recommendation for something great that you've read over the last year. Why not? One thing, it could be a comic or anything else, but I think it's always great to add to our to-read list. So we'll just start down. No one looks ready.
I'll have one. This is a French one that was part of the selection at Angoulême. It's called Modern Olympia. If you ever find this comic, it's awesome. What they do is that she took, her name is Catherine Maurice, I don't know how to pronounce it in English. She took a whole bunch of art pieces, architectural pieces or paintings, and she included them into her comic book. And she sort of changed the art piece to make it work into her story. And there's a list at the end. So me being French, I have to talk about museums. And you know, I'm not that cool person. But so all of these are all the paintings and all the art that she used. And this is a list of all the things that she used. And so she made them her own, and she put them into this very fun story about making a movie. And anyway, this is an awesome book. Anybody who's interested in art will love that one. So it's called Modern Olympia.
Thank you.
Trying to figure out what I can.
So Laura's on the Caldecott committee to best picture book. So basically, any book with any pictures in it, she's not allowed to talk about.
That was published in 2015.
Yes.
So
unless it's by someone
when
not.
I'm not being recorded, we can. you can tell me what you like, and I can say that's really good. One thing that I'm reading right now that I am just really loving, and I'm sure it's not new to many people, is the new Ms. Marvel. And I just love, I was never a superhero comic fan, and I feel like this is my entry into superheroes, and I think it's a beautiful entry. I love that she's a strong woman. I love that it's a diverse world for me, and I think it's fabulous, and I want to see it everywhere. But, Jim.
For me, Nathan Hale's Hazardous Tales.
Yeah. Yes.
I met Nathan last year at ALA Annual in Las Vegas, and I was there to help to promote the book, and I'd never met him before, and I sat in on a panel that he was giving, and he was drawing on an iPad while he was talking, and he's actually drawing a comic that would blow mine right out of the water, and I'm just watching, how do you do that while you're talking at the same time? And he's funny. He is absolutely hilarious. Anybody who can make a book about the Donner Party funny is aces for me. So he has a book called Donner Dinner Party, and it is hilarious. I mean, his latest book this year is The Underground Abductor, and it's about Harriet Tubman, and it's just amazing. Every book that he does is just pure gold. So
you got my
sorry.
but that was fine because I had a tie of three. Is that sorry? I'm just gonna say two then because you stole one of them.
Sorry.
Beauty, but I cannot remember the French book, but I can't remember the name of the artist. It's about an ugly girl from the small town in fantasy Europe who she's hideous and she smells like fish and she's just ugly, and she comes across a fairy and she makes the wish to be beautiful. And she becomes beautiful in a magical way that anybody who sees her, the beauty is interpreted by them. So she becomes this incredible object of desire. But she's just this dumb peasant girl. And the story revolves around her sort of realizing that there's more to femininity than beauty, and there is more to beauty than the perspective of men. And it is a beautiful, stunning book, and I really, really recommend it. Also, it's just, the art is haunting. Like, it's just spectacular. And the other one, which I'm sure everybody's already read, Delilah Dirk. I can't get enough of it. I love it beyond all reason. It's really great, and you guys should read it. The end.
Thank you.
I can't really think. I'm just thinking of the last books I read, which are, I love, Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. I'm only up to the third volume. I think there's a fourth and a fifth one's coming out later this year.
One of them was actually at the Angoulême Festival. Yeah.
Yeah.
Saga number four, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically it's Star Wars from the point of view of the parents. And yeah, it's just fantastical science fiction-y stuff. And I think, and the other thing, Lucy Nisley's books. Age of Displacement, I haven't read her latest one yet, but Relish, and sort of autobiographical memoir of sort of her going through her life, you know, sort of, I guess, late 20s now, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. It's good stuff.
Well, thank you, guys. The world is a better place because we have people like you. And thank you for all that you do for kids and readers out there. So can we give them a big hand? Awesome.